Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who.
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars. This is the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. We're up to episode 18 already, if you can believe that, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. Now, unlike the last two episodes of Who Wars, where we had a very Doctor Who-centric kind of skew, and that was with good reason. I mean, it was the end of the current series of Doctor Who, and we wanted to review the second half of the series and all that kind of good stuff, and we got Kate and Lex in, and we did all of that. Unlike those two episodes, this episode is actually very, very Star Wars. Now, I don't know out there what the split is among people, among the people who like Star Wars and Doctor Who, and those who just like Star Wars and those who just like Doctor Who, but I do know that this will please Steele Saunders, who tweeted at us on November 24th, "Enough of these Doctor Who-only episodes, Who Wars?" And those of you who know Steele, he's a Melbourne comedian. He's behind the This Isn't the Pod podcast and also the I Love Green Guide Letters podcast. He's a very funny guy. He is, of course, joking. Well, to some degree, he does love his Star Wars. Now, if you listen to his podcasts, you'll probably get that reference. So, as I said to him at the time, sorry, we're coming back to normal this Sunday. In fact, there is an interview later in this episode that Kate does that I think Steele will like for one very, very particular reason, and I'm not going to spoil it here and now. But speaking of that interview, this is a really cool example of how Who Wars is continuing to grow. Kate is branching out into doing fan interviews, so if you've got a particular passion with regard to Star Wars or Doctor Who and you want to talk to Kate about your fandom, have a listen to what she does later in the show. It goes for about half an hour. And I think it's a great example of the team starting to take on more diverse type offerings within the podcast, if I can put it that way. And that's just so exciting to me to sit back and on one hand not have to be doing everything. That's the selfish side of it, I guess. But on the other hand, seeing the team sort of stretch out and grow and do new things on their own. Because for everyone who contributes to the podcast present, this is really their first go at it. Well, I say that, but with what I'm about to announce next, that statement actually becomes untrue to some degree, because with this episode, we have a new team member, and I'm very excited about this. And this is a team member who some of you might know if you're out there listening to Doctor Who podcasts, and that team member is the Rev. Yes, the Rev from Diddly Dum is joining us here at Who Wars, primarily to talk about Star Wars. Obviously, he talks a lot about Doctor Who over at Diddly Dum, so he's coming over here to talk about his Star Wars fandom, which is fantastic. Of course, I couldn't resist the temptation, knowing that he loves Doctor Who, and knowing that he's into comic books, and knowing that he's into art and graphic design and things of this nature, to toss him the responsibility for doing the 12th Doctor comic reviews. So later in this episode, the 12th Doctor comic review is by me. It's the one I've been meaning to do for the past couple of episodes. But beyond that, it's going to be done by the Rev every 4 weeks or so when those 12th Doctor comics come out. So I'm quite looking forward to that. And I'm also extremely looking forward to his take on Star Wars and the little bits and pieces he's planning on putting together for us as the weeks and months go on. Because obviously listening to the Rev on Diddly Dum, I know, well, not everything, but I certainly know a lot about how he feels about Doctor Who over the years, but I know very little about how he feels about Star Wars. So for me, even as a fan of the Diddly Dum podcast, it's going to be something new for me to hear his pieces for us as they come in every week or two to the show. Now, what else happened this week? Well, it was a sad week here in Australia. We had one of our young cricketers actually get injured on the cricket pitch and subsequently die a couple of days later. So there has been a bit of a downcast feel to Australia in general at the moment due to this. We're a very sporty kind of nation. And I just wanted to mark it here. You know, Phil Hughes, rest in peace. It's a tragically sad fluke of an accident that killed him, and it's just incredible, and indeed all around the world. And I know this podcast goes to many countries around the world where cricket is played, such as South Africa and the UK and India, of course, Pakistan and so on, Sri Lanka, the list goes on, New Zealand, list goes on and on. And, you know, I know people in those countries, even though Phil wasn't, you know, one of your state's players or one of your country's players, he was someone who may have toured in your country, he's someone you would have known as playing in the Australian cricket team in the past. And although this is a Doctor Who and Star Wars podcast, the great feeling for his passing this week is just so immense. I can't not mention it here in the podcast. It might seem a strange thing to someone in a non-cricket playing nation who knows nothing about cricket and is wondering what the heck I'm going on about, but I just can't not mention it here. But moving on, and before I wrap up the intro for this week, we will have a new schedule for Who Wars in the months ahead. Obviously, we're coming into the end of the year where Doctor Who is off the air. We're going to have a Christmas special, but that's it. Even Star Wars Rebels will slow down for a little while. And for that reason, and of course for the reason that we'd like to have a break ourselves, I'm only going to put out two shows in December. I think they fall on the 14th and the 28th, so a good show on the 14th and then a show on the 28th, which will of course include the Doctor Who Christmas special. And I think I'll replicate that in January as well, and I think those dates could be the 11th and the 25th of January. Beyond that, I'm still not too sure. We'll see how these couple of months go doing Who Wars as a fortnightly show. I think it will give us sort of more chance to prepare, more chance to catch our breath on things, and that could be an interesting kind of dynamic for us. So while we'll definitely do these couple of shows in December and a couple of shows in January, beyond that, I'm still up in the air as to whether in February we'll go back to, you know, a four-week schedule, or whether we might continue doing the fortnightly show. I'm not sure. But certainly for December, January, for this quieter time of year, where many of us are off doing holidays and other sorts of things, we will be a bit quieter here at Who Wars. All right then, so that's my intro for the week. I've touched on the trailer, I've touched on the Rev joining our team, which is brilliant, and I've touched on our new schedule for December and January. I hope you're having a great week, and without any further ado, let's move into my top stories for it. Now then, into my top stories of the week, and I guess I can't not have this as my top story of the week, even though we have a whole 30-minute plus feature coming up on it later in the show, and that's that the new Star Wars trailer is out for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Now, rather than preempt anything we say in that 30-minute plus feature that's coming up, I thought it might be fun to just mention our contributor here, Kate, who, before she had even joined the Who Wars team here, sent in an audio to me speculating on, you know, when we'd get the new Star Wars movie name, when we'd see our first teaser trailer and so on. And Kate's guesses were well in advance of mine. She was saying, oh, look, we'll get a name and maybe a teaser by the end of the year. And I was like, well, that would be interesting. But hey, with the prequels, with these other movies, you know, made in the modern era, we had those, you know, key bits of information a lot closer to the film actually coming out. So Kate's guesses seemed more on the optimistic side, mine seemed more rooted in what had gone before, and lo and behold, Kate's guesses have come true. In fact, if we go back a few episodes now, this isn't her original prediction, but this is something she said a little while ago, and she even talks about a teaser, or a teaser trailer, as she calls it, coming before December, which is exactly what we got. Have a listen to this audio. So, we've got the name. Do you want to revise your thoughts on a trailer?
Yeah, I do actually. Well, okay, I think instead of just having one teaser trailer, I think maybe we'll get a teaser trailer. Ooh. In the next month.
What's a teaser trailer?
It's shorter than a trailer, or shorter than a teaser. It's a teaser of a teaser.
So it's shorter than a teaser, but it's longer than a teaser trailer, perhaps?
Yes, something like that. But no, it seems like from all the chatter that I've been hearing on Twitter and everything that we will probably get something within or before December, I'm thinking. Something visual. Something.
Yeah, well, I know in that famous speech that Kevin Smith did at Comic-Con or wherever it was. Actually, I think he's done it at multiple locations, because whenever I see the footage, it's always slightly different. He did mention that JJ showed him some rough cuts of stuff, and he was saying how good it looked already. So they certainly would have some footage they could perhaps show without spoiling anything, and would just give people a taste of what's to come.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we'll get a teaser this month. I don't know when we'll get a full teaser. maybe they'll just go ahead with the regular teaser trailer. But I still think it would be awesome to get our full trailer at Star Wars Celebration. I think I'll stick to that.
Okay. Yeah, look, the timelines are all sort of changing from what the prequels were, which is what I'd been basing all my guesses on. You know, well, for the prequels, they did this because they were examples of movies released in the modern era. And I thought, well, if they're going to do the same sort of marketing, it might be similar. But no, maybe things are changing.
They're onto the Disney way of things.
Yeah. And look, when it comes to a trailer, I'd be happy just to, I don't know, have the camera tracking behind maybe an X-Wing pilot walking along through the hangar with all the X-Wings.
Yeah.
You know, just 10 seconds of that, just so I could see some X-Wings and see a costume and see the film grain, because he's shooting it on real film instead of digital, and just go, oh, that looks like Star Wars. That would excite me. I wouldn't have to see anything else. So there you go. So far, Kate's guesses have been pretty damn amazing when it comes to Star Wars. So Kate, keep making good guesses, and we'll keep getting Star Wars material early, I guess. All right, moving on, and kind of related to Episode 7. Well, yeah, pretty much related to Episode 7. I saw this really, really interesting piece on YouTube where Mark Hamill basically predicts what's happening now with Episode 7, where, you know, he's an older, more grizzled sort of Jedi, potentially an Obi-Wan type character. And look, just have a listen to this audio. This audio is from 1983. That's 31 years ago, if you want to do the math. Here we go.
So loyal to George, and I owe him so much. He at one time said, would you consider playing an Obi-Wan type character handing Excalibur down to the next generation? I said, when that would that be? And at the time, he said, around 2011. Mm. I thought, gee, as much as I'd like to have a job lined up at the turn of the century, I was figuring out how old I'd be at that point. And I thought, I don't know.
Far out. I love when people do George Lucas impressions. It seems everyone has one. They all tend to sound a bit like Kermit the Frog or something along those lines. And Mark does a nice George there. And gosh, yeah, talking about being an Obi-Wan type character in 2011, he's only a few years out, and maybe if Lucas hadn't sold the company, we might have even kicked on with the film a few years before now. So very, very interesting. Very, very cool. I was really happy to have found that. Something else I saw this week, which comes from the New York Times, and it relates to an offhand comment I made in a recent show. I can't even remember the show, but I did mention how Star Wars saved Marvel from financial ruin. I was making the comment, I think, you know, everyone sees Marvel as this world-beating company today and pushing out all these movies one after the other and having a schedule that goes for the next, you know, four decades or something. And it just seems like such an unstoppable juggernaut that I think people might actually be interested to know that there was a time when Marvel was in serious financial trouble. And this story, it's only a quick story, it briefly goes through that. It says, you know, quote, in 1975, Marvel was the top comics company, but dwindling retail outlets and rising newsprint costs threatened it and the entire industry. There was even talk of shuttering the company if conditions didn't improve. But the Marvel editor and writer Roy Thomas, in 1976, persuaded his skeptical bosses to gamble on a 6-issue adaptation of the new George Lucas movie scheduled to be released the next year. The Star Wars people found me, Mr. Thomas said in a recent phone interview, and I was always open to the idea. I liked space opera. I'd always enjoyed Planet Comics as a kid. And in parentheses it says Planet Comics was a long-running home for science fiction in the early days of comic books. There are a couple of details in the Marvel Star Wars deal that seem quaint, if not downright insane, to us here in 2014. First, Marvel paid zero in licensing fees. Second, the Lucas camp wanted the comic book out before the movie's release. George Lucas and his people were just happy to have a comic book out there for advance publicity, Mr. Thomas said. And again, in parentheses, such licenses today tend to be in the 6-figure range and also include a royalty arrangement. I mean, yeah, with what we know of Star Wars licensing today, Can you imagine Star Wars giving the license to a company and saying, hey, yeah, go and make something with our IP. Won't cost you anything. Yeah, no, they're just doing it for the publicity in those days. It's quite incredible to think of. Now, Star Wars number one, written by Mr. Thomas and hand-drawn by Howard Chaykin and others, did arrive before the film, a hard sell on its cover, the greatest space fantasy of all. And I actually have a copy of the first edition of Star Wars number one, which I'm quite proud to own here, I've got to say as an aside. Now, Mr. Thomas writes in 75 Years of Marvel, which I believe is an upcoming publication, quote, early issues sold well, even before the movie's May 77 debut, and afterward, sales for a time exceeded 1 million copies per issue. Wow. Thus, even as they conquered the box office in the summer of 1977, Han Solo, Luke, Leia, and company tossed Marvel an unexpected cash lifeline, helping to keep the company in the black until comics direct market became established enough to stabilize the industry. So there's an interesting little backstory, ties into something I said recently, and I thought you might like to hear that. Finally this week, we're on such a Star Wars kick, but I do want to toss in a little bit of Doctor Who. Sorry, Steele Saunders, sorry. AM Media, who we've spoken about here in the past, they make the Doctor Who Dark Journey audios. Basically, fans out there writing these audio plays and acting them out, has made it to the Audioverse Awards final top five of nominees, with Roy Miranda for Best Actor, Kate Elise Forrest for Best Actress, Andrew Chalmers for Best Writing, and Clayton Turner for Best Sound Engineer. Now, this is quite a big deal, so if you want a link to award info, go to the show notes. But if you're going to go by the audio here, it's www.audioverseawards.net/site, S-I-T-E. And now, look, the Doctor Who Dark Journey people are really hoping that fandom can get behind them on this, because these awards are based on voting, and voting runs until December 3rd, so voting is almost up. If you're out there and you listen to Doctor Who Dark Journey, or you've heard of it and you think it's a great idea, jump on and listen to an episode. If you like what you hear, toss in a vote for these people in these Audioverse Awards. I'm sure they'd be very appreciative of it, and it would be great to see such a talented bunch of people getting some awards and getting some recognition from the Audioverse Awards for what they do. I'm sure they don't do it for this kind of recognition, but this kind of recognition is always nice, and you know, just a little bit of cream on top for people who do this kind of thing. Okay, and that wraps it up for my top stories of the week. I hope you enjoyed those. Without any further ado, we're going to rip into a bunch of Star Wars material now. First, our feature on the Star Wars trailer and what all the team members, including our newest member, the Rev, thought of it. Then we'll have a Star Wars fan interview, which I think you might quite enjoy. And then a Star Wars Rebels review of the final two episodes to have aired this year, which were actually a two-part story, which was something I've been looking forward to for a long time. After that, we'll get to my review of the 12th Doctor comic issue number 2, which I've been meaning to bring you for a couple of episodes now. And by then, I think I'll be in need of a beer. So without any further ado, let's get into these features. Alrighty then, and straight on to the segment that I think many people will be tuning into this podcast to listen to, and that's the reactions of the Who Wars team to the new Star Wars trailer that came out on Friday in the US. Of course, here in Australia, it was already Saturday. But I digress. I sat down, I think it was about 5:30 in the morning, and I recorded my thoughts about what I wanted to see. Then I watched the trailer and recorded my thoughts about what I'd just seen. Now, I'll play you a brief snippet of my pre-trailer thoughts. Now, this is 5:30 in the morning. I've just got up. I want to see the trailer, but I also want to record these thoughts about it before I do, so that I have this genuine sort of recording of myself before I've seen it. But as you'll hear, I didn't sound fully awake, so here's just a brief snippet. Hey there, everyone. It's Rob here, obviously. Let's check. It's 5:30 a.m. Saturday morning here in Australia, and I've not long woken up, and the first thing I did was open my iPad and go to StarWars.com to see if the new trailer was up. And there is an icon there saying, new trailer, 88 seconds, or whatever it is. And there's the Millennium Falcon chasing two TIE fighters across a desert landscape. Now, that's all I've seen at the moment. I thought, I'll sit down here and quickly record something. I'll go away and watch it, and then I'll come back and let you know what I think. So, yeah, I'm not going to make you sit through the 3 or 4 minutes of talking like that that I recorded. Suffice to say, what I wanted to see was I was interested in seeing the original characters, if they were going to be in the trailer. I was interested in seeing some of the new characters, if they were in the trailer. And overall, I wanted to see if the trailer gave me a sense of being Star Wars, you know, from the way it looks, from the way the scenes were sort of shot, and so on. So I watched the trailer, and I watched it only once, and then I came back here to the little studio in my study, and I recorded my thoughts. Now, I'm a little more awake at this point, as you can tell. I'm still not fully awake, but I'm a lot more awake than I was when I was doing my pre-thoughts. So here's me after having seen the trailer once. Okay, I'm back now, and I've watched the trailer once. I did this quite deliberately. I've only watched it once. And so here I am with my initial thoughts. Wow, interesting. Probably my overriding thought through the whole thing was, oh yes, that ticks off that rumor, that ticks off that rumor, that ticks off that rumor. In rough order, I think John Boyega as a stormtrooper, he pops his head up at the very start. We saw him. Stormtroopers appeared to be in some sort of dropship or something where they were packed in very tightly, and we got flashes of the new look stormtrooper helmet that had been leaked months ago. The new lightsaber with the crossguard. I don't think crossguard is actually the right expression for that, but you know what I mean. That new look and so on. All these things that have been hinted at as rumours for a long time, and now it's like, oh, there it is, there it is, there it is. So, funnily enough, that was my overriding thought. I thought some of the scenes, I guess due to modern technology, I mean, we've been talking for months and months about how practical effects and sets and so on are going to make this look more like the original trilogy, but I've got to say, parts of that did look like the prequels. I think there was someone jumping on some sort of, not a speeder, but a speeder-like craft, like a one-person bike, and zooming off into the distance, and that looked a bit prequely rather than original trilogy. And I guess this is to be expected, but I guess I was taken aback in some places where I thought, oh, that looks more like the prequels. I loved what appeared to be a squadron of X-Wings flying very low to the ground, and we got a shot inside the cockpit, and that looked very original trilogy, and the way they're all zooming along what appeared to be close to the ground, I'm going to have to go back and watch it now, looked like they're doing some sort of dangerous sort of mission. That's intriguing. And then of course right at the end, seeing the Millennium Falcon chasing those TIE fighters, as I'd seen in the still shot before I hit play on the video, but to see that, and to see the way, I guess it's CGI, but if you understand what I mean when I say the way the camera moved around that Millennium Falcon, it's like we've never seen the Millennium Falcon flying before. So that was quite exciting. And then the trailer finished, basically, at that point. And I thought, gosh, 88 seconds does go very quickly. So that's my initial reaction after seeing it for the first time. Initial reaction, A, ticking off boxes, re-spoilers. B, thinking some of the scenes looked a bit prequely, I guess due to the CGI. C, being intrigued by those X-Wings. And D, I think simply after I stop recording this, I'm going to go back and watch it some more, because there's obviously things I've probably missed. I might get the freeze frame going on some of these scenes, see what else I can see. And yeah, gosh, I wonder what the rest of the team's thinking. I know there's some emails in my inbox, and I'm sure it's the reactions from some of them. So, wow, what a weekend. Okay, so that was me after seeing the trailer once. I've now seen it, gosh, maybe 15, 20 times, and it gets better and better. I'll have some more thoughts at the end of this segment, but for now I want to get into the rest of the team to hear what they think. And hey, let's start with The Rev. The Rev is our new team member. He's a long-time member of the Diddly Dum podcast. He's over here to talk about Star Wars, and I think he'll do a little Doctor Who on Who Wars as well. And without any further ado, here's Rev.
Hello, hello, Rev's up. Hey, well, what an exciting day this has been. Mind-filled with when's it going to come on, when am I going to be able to see it, what are the time differences, things like that. And I'm travelling to work and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to have to be a clever trailer. It's going to have to appeal to all the old school fans and all the fans from other years, as well as grasping those all-important new fans who are going to go and see the new film. So there's all that excitement. And well, I don't like doing things by halves. So I was with a group of media students today, many of whom were science fiction and Star Wars fans, so we decided that we'd put the trailer up on the big screen and get the speakers booming out, and everyone was very excited and feeding off my excitement as well, I think, about this trailer coming on. Then the moment came when I saw it come through onto Apple, so I got everyone in and we sat down in the dark, and there was a little shushed silence, and then I pressed play and a big sign came up saying, please download updates to QuickTime. So a huge groan, but the anticipation grew even more. And then we got into the trailer. So before my opinions, of course, the opinions of these students was quite important. And some of them are a bit miffed. I think they were expecting to see a complete finished film, a proper almost time for release trailer. I don't think they were quite used to this style of teaser trailer. So many questions and things from them, and concerns about when it was set, because they all look at it in such a different way from us, you know. Some men, a lot of them don't realise that the original six were made in a different order, and they think episode one was the first, a lot of them. So it's very interesting their points of view. But anyway, if you want to hear my opinions and points of view. And I think one of the things that struck me, that all the build up to this and the news that's been leaking out and popping out from Pinewood, that says, oh, this film looks like a Star Wars film. Definitely looks like a Star Wars film. And I was thinking, well, I hope it does. And I was thinking, but J.J. Abrams, he's got a very striking style, hasn't he? And lo and behold, there was some J.J. Abrams style and some lens flare I noticed. So, yeah, he got that in. But, yeah, so that was one thing that was very striking. Also noticed that, of course, in the in the original trilogy, 4-6, we had a rebellion who were using tatty ships and what they could find and put together. So we was used to seeing the tat. So seeing things like bright, shiny, shop fresh, peacetime X-wings was quite exciting and interesting. And again, the stormtroopers as well, a new polished suit of armor there for a bit of new funding, obviously, to the new empire, for want of a better word. I thought that was a bit. You know, it felt a bit odd to start with, but then you think, well, it is set 30 years later, and of course, you know, well, cars and stereos and TVs and phones now all change over the decades, don't they, in our own world. So, of course, the gap we've missed out on the evolution of these things we haven't seen, but there's some interesting gaps to fill there another time in books and animations, I've no doubt. But yeah, I love the speeder bike with the big chunky front, the costumes looking great. Intrigued to know how they're going to make a toy of that fantastic lightsaber there, and how you're going to make those extra little bits on the handguard pop out. But yeah, that was very good. And also, I like the way that the beam of that lightsaber seems a bit more rough, a bit more dangerous and scary looking. So some very good little bits and bobs in there, I thought. And a lot of anticipation for the next lot of trailers, I think. A little bit disappointed not to see the cast there. I was really excited to see Han and Leia and Luke and Chewie and the droids. But it's a whole new world we're entering, isn't it? They gave us enough familiar little things there with the ships and stuff. But we don't know who these people are, or who's good, who's bad, who's twisted, who's going to turn, who's not going to turn, who's being hunted, what they're doing. Oh, so much exciting stuff. Anyway, waffled on long enough there, I'm absolutely sure. But yeah. Very exciting, and I've watched it on many different size screens now, and just indulged myself on the big telly before I did this, and yeah, looking good, and I can't wait for more. And that theme tune, oh, it just does it, doesn't it, eh? Okay, well, I'll sign off, and I'll speak to you again soon.
All right, so that was the Rev's experience with the trailer. I've got to say, I laughed when I heard about it going up on the big screen and everyone's anticipating it, and then QuickTime has to, you know, have an update. Doesn't that always happen? It's happened to me in meetings before. You know, back when I was a journalist, I'd go and sit in, you know, some PR company's boardroom, and they'd put something up on the screen and they'd go to show me something. And they'd be like, oh, QuickTime needs to update, or, you know, some other program needs to update, maybe a Flash or something. And I can empathize with that. So, yeah, look, I was interested also to hear how the students, these younger folks who would have been very young even when the last Star Wars movie came out, Revenge of the Sith, how they were perhaps perceiving what the trailer would be and what the film might be differently to us. And I say us in air quotes, you know, us older fans. That was very interesting. Now let's move on to Kate. Kate is out on the road at the moment, so she's not recording with her usual great setup and her great microphone, and she's clearly a little tired, but she did want to put something in for us. So here's Kate, not quite herself, but I think you can excuse that, as she does want to come in and tell us what she thinks. Over to you, Kate.
Hey everybody, Kate here. I've been on the road and living off 3G for the last few days, but I wanted to share my thoughts about the Star Wars tease and share this momentous occasion with all of you. Before I watched it, I was feeling fear and hope, but most of all excitement, because like a lot of us, Star Wars means so much, and it feels like the end of an era where open speculation and our imagination was the limit, and it's the dawn of a new one that begins another chapter in each of our Star Wars stories. So it's exciting. So my initial thoughts were that it was pretty short, you know, it really was a tease. And if you've been paying attention to spoilers, it's not really anything earth-shattering. But I did like the original trilogy feel, and it seems like it's going to be a great space adventure with new characters that we'll end up liking just as much as the original big three, you know. But I did find that interesting that none of the big three or the original characters that we know were in it. Also, I heard that Andy Serkis is doing the voiceover. So now I'm wondering, maybe he really is playing the Force. Just, I wonder who he is and what he's playing. So that'll be interesting to find that out. As far as a full trailer, I've kind of given up on speculation because obviously we've seen that we are in the dawn of a new era where past speculation and past expectations don't really fit anymore. But maybe we'll still get one at Celebration. But I feel like, you know, when they were releasing the tease, it was kind of done clumsily and in an awkward manner, and it seemed like it alienated a lot of fans. So maybe they can release the full trailer sooner. And why not do it at Super Bowl in conjunction with an online release? That would be pretty cool, and I think everybody would like that a lot. So, the Force has awakened, and this is a really exciting time to be a Star Wars fan. And I had to be kind of brief this time, but maybe I can expound further on my thoughts at another time. So, until then, LLNZ, and may the Force be with you.
All right, thank you, Kate. The Super Bowl, now there's an idea, you know, and folks, Kate has been right in the past about things. As we spoke about in the news segment, Kate's predictions, even though they seemed, you know, a bit out there at the time she made them compared to how Star Wars has been marketed in the past, have actually been right so far. So, gosh, who knows? Maybe there'll be something around the time of the Super Bowl. Wouldn't that be exciting? Some more footage, some more Star Wars to look at. And, yeah. Now, moving on to Lex. Lex did something a little different. Lex had her, I think, cousin staying, and his name is Doug, and they sat down and started looking at the Star Wars trailer, and she started to secretly record him and his reactions. Now, his reactions to the Star Wars trailer aren't all that exciting. What gets more exciting is he starts to remember this other trailer he'd seen 2 days earlier, and he's convinced that it's a real trailer. Obviously it wasn't. I know the trailer he's referring to. I could tell from the audio you're about to hear, I could tell exactly what fan trailer it was. Because that's what it is, a fan trailer. But Doug was convinced that he'd seen something new and exciting before anyone else in the world. So let's play a bit of that audio. It's a very long piece. So I've actually chopped it up into the more interesting bits if you hear some skips in the tape. But yeah, without any further ado, let's hear Lex surreptitiously recording her cousin, Doug.
There's been an awakening.
Why did you turn down so low? A black stormtrooper, that's not from the theater, right?
A black stormtrooper, yeah.
Swear, did I see this or not? Did I imagine it was a very good dream then?
Huh.
I saw a trailer, darn it. I know I did, I'm not imagining this. I saw something 2 days ago.
Maybe it was fake.
No, it was real. It was real,
what
I
do you,
saw
What
it.
Do you think of these? Do you know any of these crafts at all? Do you know who that is?
I'm trying not to see anything. Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that saber, it's a cross.
Yeah.
And the light. And then this gave me goosebumps.
He's flying like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Han Solo. Crazy mother.
You think that was Han Solo?
Of course it was Han Solo. That's
okay.
The one in Falcon.
I don't know. It could have been his son.
Could be, but I doubt Han would let his son drive that thing. If anything, if it's not Han, then it's Chewie. I saw a trailer. I'm not making this up. It was 2 days ago. It was a couple hours before I went to bed. I mean, I was drinking, so... But I saw it! I saw a trailer, and it showed Luke with the beard and everything, and it was really... It was Mark Hamill with a beard.
What?
Yeah! I swear I saw this two days ago.
It. Wait, where did you
and
see
it? And
it
had that voice. It had that voiceover. It was a different trailer than this.
What?
I know I saw this. Then I was thinking, this is really cool, and then I went to bed like an hour later.
Find it! How do we find it?
I mean, I had to go back on my own computer.
Were you dreaming?
No! I swear I saw it! You get...
Okay, what do I...
Apple's evil.
What are we searching for here?
I'll still cover my phone this
evening. Episode 7.
No.
Yoda, where did you come from?
So I remember thinking the trailer wasn't supposed to be revealed for another 2 days and I saw it.
Maybe you saw some leaked footage.
This is the one I saw because it started with this music.
Oh.
Yeah, it had the angry robot. This is it. This is it.
What is... Okay, play.
Yes, this is the one I saw.
Cool.
This is the one I saw.
Twist it.
It doesn't turn. This is the one I saw. It's
okay.
Not working, so just watch this one. I swear to God I saw this. I was so giddy when I watched it. Oh, I'm glad I'm not losing my freaking mind. Unless this is a fan-made trailer, it was very well done, but...
It might be.
It was a better way to see.
That looked old.
This is new footage. That's not old. See?
Yeah.
The second I saw the explosion. I'm telling you. This is a different trailer. There's two trailers out there.
I think that low note is called a bass explosion or something.
Bass explosion?
Yeah, bass explosion. All right. Okay.
Oh, that's a way off. I mean, because I remember thinking, this is so cool. I'm watching this 2 days early. Most people aren't even going to see it yet. And then the next morning, I remember waking up and like, I was so happy. Like, I cried a little bit. Because I started to write something on Facebook about it, and I was too drunk. And I'm like, screw it. I'll write something tomorrow. I started writing, I cried up, or teared up a little bit watching this trailer, not going to lie. And then I deleted it. I'm like, I'll figure something better. And then I woke up just like so relaxed and euphoric the next morning. It's like, I saw the Star Wars trailer. I'm happy again. I have something to live for in my life.
That's great.
And then I saw that one. I'm like, no, wait, that's not what I saw. That's not the one. I swear it's it. Yes, that's a relief.
He's got problems. And he's whistling the Darth Vader theme song. Doug, come here.
Okay. What's up?
You were recorded that whole conversation.
Oh, great.
Okay, go.
Is this now blackmail material?
Yep.
Excellent.
You've been put on Who Wars?
That was great stuff. Thanks for doing that, Lex. That was a really different take on the trailer. And I guess across all of us here today, we've done a different sort of take. The Rev's put in his piece. Kate's done her piece from the road. Lex has, you know, done the James Bond and recorded Duck. It's been really great. I guess sitting here now for me, and I'm at an advantage to the other team members who had to record their pieces early, I can now sit back, though, and look at this scene for scene and really think about it. And I just want to add those thoughts here at the end of the piece. Now, I guess the first thing to note is the music. It's all new John Williams music. It does start off with a piece very similar to the music from Jabba's sail barge in Return of the Jedi, where Luke's about to drop into the Sarlacc pit, and he's readying R2 to fire the lightsaber, and there's that that piece of music. I think the music is called The Return of the Jedi, because that's what the scene conveys. And this music at the start of the trailer is evocative of that, but it's not quite the same. I thought that was kind of cool. It's similar to what Star Wars Rebels does, actually, where it takes well-known pieces of Star Wars music and just twists them a little. So that was fun to hear. And then, of course, we have that voice. Now, Kate mentioned in her piece that she thinks that might be Andy Serkis doing the low-pitched voice, you know, sort of thing. I've heard other people say, oh, well, that's Cumberbatch, you know. And I think they say that because Benedict Cumberbatch is in everything these days, and he's been a little coy about any involvement with Star Wars, to the point where people think he might be being coy because he is actually in it. Maybe he doesn't want to overshadow the fact that the new Lord of the Rings, the new Hobbit film is about to come out, where he obviously plays Smaug with a similar voice, actually, which is another reason people think it might be Benedict. But could it be Andy Serkis? We know Andy Serkis is involved, and I'm sure most people can do that kind of voice, so it might not necessarily be Ben Cumberbatch either. But anyway, let's move on. We then see John Boyega as a stormtrooper. Now, that had been a rumor for a long, long time, that John Boyega was playing a stormtrooper. He pops up into the frame. He's worried. He's sweaty. You know, what's he worried about? Has he been maybe on a mission and he's been knocked out, and he wakes up in the middle of the desert alone and he's freaking out because, you know, that's the situation? Or is he maybe being chased by somebody and that's just in the middle of the chase somewhere? There's many ways you could interpret what he's doing there, and I guess that's the fun of a teaser trailer. What is John Boyega doing there? What's he worried about? Is he running from someone? Is he scared? What's happening? And so on. I guess the costumer and ex-501st Legion member in me also looks at the new armor and the new bodysuit. Obviously, in the prequels, they took great pride in saying, ah, we didn't build any suits of armor for this film, which was a colossal mistake. It's always great to see actors wearing armor, whether you see their face or not. And here I was noting how the armor fits together, how similar it is in some ways to original Stormtrooper armor, what the differences are, and so on. And I noted the new bodysuit. It seems to be a little more ribbed than traditional Stormtrooper bodysuits and so on. But again, that's sort of a costumer thing in me. I'm not sure everyone would be going into that much detail. Then we have that little droid trundling along. It's like a soccer ball. In fact, it even has a pattern on it like a soccer ball, so I assume that's what we're meant to be thinking of when we see it. It's allegedly Kira's, if Daisy Ridley's character is actually called Kira. Everyone assumes her name is Kira. Well, apparently that is Kira's droid. Now, I kind of liked it. I thought, oh, that's different. That's cute, you know, and it's burbling along to itself. But then I started to read online people saying, oh, no, is this the Jar Jar Binks moment? Is there going to be a stupid, you know, comedy character in it? And I thought about that, and I thought, ooh, maybe. And then I thought, no, hang on. The droids, 3PO and R2 in the original trilogy, were the comic relief, and that worked quite well. You know, if it's just this little funny droid trundling around, similar to Chopper, maybe, in Star Wars Rebels, then that could be quite okay. You know, maybe there's a little bit of a recoil from the audience where it's like, oh, that's meant to be a soccer ball. Oh, that's a bit silly. But, you know, if it's this fun little droid rolling around, you know, burbling away, sort of like R2-D2, sort of like a pet for this Kira character, then it could actually be a lot cuter and a lot more fun than a Jar Jar Binks type character. At least that's what I'm hoping at the moment. So there are some thoughts on the soccer ball droid. Then we see stormtroopers in what I assume is a dropship. They're all lined up, you know, packed in like sardines, and the ramp is lowering. They're obviously on some kind of mission that they're being dropped into, not in a very traditional way. They're obviously coming in hard and fast. You know, there have been rumors about stormtroopers maybe attacking a village on that desert planet. It might be that. It might be something completely different. Who knows? I've got to say there that the direction and the editing looked very Abrams. That didn't look, at least in the flashes we were getting, maybe it's just the way the trailer's cut, actually, but it gives the sense of that moment being a very Abrams kind of moment. So that was curious. Then we have Kira, or the character we assume is Kira, on the bike, Daisy Ridley. And I'm sure everyone's noted the mistake in the CGI in that scene when you see the close-up of her about to rev it up, or whatever the equivalent of revving up one of those vehicles is. There is a, I don't know what it is, a staff or a pike or something metallic and tubular running alongside. But when it pulls back and we see her zoom off into the distance in a more long shot, that piece of metal isn't there at all. So is it just because it hasn't been added in that long shot? Or are they actually two different scenes of her on the same vehicle, but with a different configuration? I don't know. That sort of stands out. It's one of those things, once it's seen, it cannot be unseen. And people are thinking it's a mistake, but it might not be a mistake. Moving on, we've got Oscar Isaac in an X-Wing cockpit. Now, the first thing I notice is the X-Wing helmet here looks odd and uncomfortable. It sort of comes in really tight on his cheeks for some reason. I'm trying to understand the real world, air quotes, meaning behind that sort of shape. In the original trilogy, we had more traditional helmets, and indeed they were very traditional because they were based very heavily on real-life pilot helmets from the US Air Force, whereas here this is a more fantastical kind of creation, and I just don't understand why a helmet that's protecting your whole head would come in so tightly over your cheeks rather than extend a little further down. So it's a strange looking helmet. I'm not sure it's a helmet I'd like to have as a collectible even. I did like the original helmets. I'm just, again, I try and understand why something might be developed in a certain way in universe, if that makes sense, and I just don't understand how that would be comfortable or protective. So that's a little odd, but let's move on from there. We then see the X-Wings in profile zooming in very low over water, and we've got sea spray coming up, and the S-foils are open, and we finally see how the S-foils work on these new X-Wings. We saw months ago when JJ did his Force for Change video the X-Wing with the S-foils closed, and we could tell that they were going to open in a different way to the traditional X-Wings, and here we see they open and how they open, and they look really cool. So them coming in hard and fast, low over that water, the sea spray, the way the S-foils look, you know, what sort of mission are they doing? It's like, you know, a World War II movie. It's like the Dam Busters or something, coming in low over water. You know, are they trying to fly under the radar? Are they attacking something very low down? I don't know. Leo, my wife, one of the things she said to me was, oh, it's X-Wings in atmosphere. That is awesome. Because I guess in the original trilogy, we saw some ships in atmosphere. We saw like snow speeders, for example, in atmosphere. But here we're seeing X-Wings in atmosphere, low to the ground. For those people who read the Rogue Squadron books or read the Rogue Squadron comics or even played some of the Rogue Squadron or X-Wing games, seeing X-Wings doing this kind of thing is just freaking awesome. So thumbs up there, big thumbs up there, actually. Probably my favorite part of the trailer. Well, aside from what happens at the very end, of course. Moving on, then we have the Sith Lord. He's very sort of Darth Maul from behind, you know, with the way he's dressed, and he's got a thick kind of leatherish belt around his middle, but he looks a bit disheveled, and I assume this is the guy who we've seen in leaked pictures with the mask that looks a bit like Darth Revan from the Old Republic games. And then, of course, he ignites the new lightsaber. Now, Leo hates it. She said to me, I don't like how they're always trying to do something new with the lightsabers. You know, every time they have a new game or in the prequels or whatever, it's like they're always trying to do something new with them. Just leave them as they are. And I totally get that point of view. If you grow up with lightsabers for a long time, maybe with the original trilogy, and they're all, you know, single-bladed, simple weapons, when they start doing stuff like this, I know it can be jarring, but I guess, and I said this on Steel Saunders' Facebook page in regard to someone else commenting on this topic, when I first saw Darth Maul ignite the double-bladed lightsaber, I didn't like it. Honestly, I didn't like it. I the thought in my head was like, okay, I know what you're trying to do there. You're trying to make a bow staff. It's a martial arts weapon. I get that. But, oh, it's not really a lightsaber when it's double-bladed. And I felt like that for a little while, until eventually it just sunk in, and a double-bladed lightsaber is just totally part of a Jedi or a Sith's weaponry now to me. It's totally normal. So I think with this sword, it's jarring now, and people are like, oh, you're just trying to do something new. Oh, it looks a bit silly. People are saying, oh, look, it's a cross. And I don't think there's meant to be any sort of, you know, Christian analogy there or anything. I think it's just a case that it's trying to be like a broadsword, you know, maybe like a big broadsword or claymore or something. And I'm sure its configuration will come into play in the movie. I'm sure someone will chop down and hit that cross guard area or whatever that little bar is called, and it'll become part of the plot, similar to how Darth Maul's lightsaber got chopped in two at one point, and, you know, focus was brought on the weapon itself. I'm sure that will happen, and I'm sure over time, particularly if they do cool stuff with it in the movie, it will just become very normal in time. But now, yeah, I can understand why people feel a bit weird about it. Alright, and then on to the final scene, which of course is the Millennium Falcon. I mentioned this in my little piece, you know, the camera angles, the way the camera, or us as the audience, are kind of moving around the Falcon and watching it swoop and swirl and do things that it could never do back in the days of just being a model. It's beautiful. The Falcon looks sharper and more in focus than the models in the original trilogy as well. I guess that's the beauty of CGI. And the more times I see it and concentrate on the whole piece with the visuals and the music, and I watch as it goes really close to the sand, some of the sand kick up, and then the TIE fighters come in with their distinctive sound and the lasers and everything, I think, wow, that looks really, really good. You can tell why they ended with that piece in the trailer. And I do hope that it's Han at the controls. They've been talking about maybe Oscar Isaac is possibly the son of Han and Leia, and he might get to fly the Millennium Falcon at some point. There's rumours that Han's off. He's got his own Star Destroyer now or something. But no, really, I'm hoping that's Han at the controls. I hope that's Han just doing those wild and wacky manoeuvres above that desert planet. That would just make me so happy if the scene then cuts to Han and Chewie at the controls, you know, wrestling with them and just doing something awesome in that moment. I think that would be great. Beyond that, there's just a strange little saber noise as the screen fades to black. I don't think it's there for any particular reason, just a little bit of added sizzle, I guess. And that's it. So that's my longer form thoughts on the trailer, now that I've watched it several times, now that I've thought about it, now that I can remember each and every bit and comment on each and every bit of them. And I hope this has been interesting. I hope you've enjoyed the team's comments and my comments. If you have comments on the trailer, we'd love to hear them. If you'd love to send us an email or something, even send us an MP3, record your thoughts, record it in your own voice and send it in. And we can use something like that on the show. That would be awesome. Yeah. Okay, look, without any further ado, let's move on to the next segment, something I'm looking forward to. And Steel Saunders, if you're listening, keep listening, because you'll be looking forward to this too.
Hey everybody, it's me, Kate. Here at Who Wars, we're always interested in hearing from you, the fans. So we're integrating a new feature into the show where we periodically interview a Star Wars and or Doctor Who fan. This week we're here with animal expert and Ewok enthusiast, David Mizajewski. He's an awesome Star Wars fan, and he did an incredible Ewok diorama project. So let's find out more. Hi, David. Welcome to Who Wars.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. No problem. So since this is a Star Wars Doctor Who podcast, I'd like to start with a question. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
I can answer unequivocally Star Wars. And I know that will probably make half of your listeners hate me, but not because I have anything against Doctor Who. Just frankly, I haven't been able to find the time to just sort of absorb it all and take it in. So I have lots of friends who are obsessed with Doctor Who. And so it's on my list, I promise. I'm still making my way through Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, okay.
I know I'm like, you know, 15 years behind, but I didn't watch it at the time, and so I'm catching up with that. Once I'm done with that, I've got two more seasons to go. I'm going to get into Doctor Who. So I definitely am a Star Wars fan.
Okay, great. You know, I had a feeling you might be.
You think?
So why don't you go ahead and tell us about your Star Wars story?
Sure. You know, Star Wars is one of those things that got me into fantasy and sci-fi, which has been sort of a lifelong love at this point. And it really goes back to the very beginning. I was born in 1975, and one of my very, very first memories was seeing Star Wars, A New Hope, in the drive-in theater with my family. I don't remember much, but I definitely had these sort of like three-year-old sort of very sort of, not very well-formed memories, but I can definitely remember the Darth Vader breathing, and I can remember the battle, the fight between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi at the end, and the lightsabers going, and so that's what, you know, Star Wars has been part of my life from a very early age. Empire Strikes Back was the first movie that I got to go to without my parents. My big sister and her friend took me and our little sister. I was in, I think, second grade at that point. So that was a milestone. And then Return of the Jedi, of course, came around. And that was the first movie that I got to go to with just my friends.
Cool.
I was probably around 9 years old. So, you know, even just the original trilogy coming out, it was part of my milestones as a kid growing up, and also sort of the entrance into my geekery. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So a while back on the show, we asked a question, not necessarily your favorite character, but in the Star Wars universe, which character would you like to be?
That is such a hard question.
I know it is, isn't it?
Well, all right. There's something about Kit Fisto that I've always really liked. I don't really know much about him. I haven't really gotten into a lot of the extended universe stuff, and I don't even know if there's anything about him in there. But just from the little bit that we see of him in the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith, and then also in the Clone Wars cartoon series, he's really cool. But yeah. I think I will have to go with Chewbacca. I am in my real life, I am a conservationist, and I work with wild animals, and I've always been drawn just as much to the world of wildlife and furry creatures as I have been to fantasy and sci-fi. Nice. So Chewbacca, I've always loved. And, obviously when we talk a little bit about my Ewok obsession, it fits squarely into that category. So if I had to pick one character to be, it would be Chewbacca. I mean, come on, he's badass. Yeah, he's 7 feet tall. He rips people's arms out.
Yep, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so Chewie would be.
So that's interesting about, like, with Chewbacca and the Ewoks. Do you feel like Star Wars actually influenced your career choices then?
You know, I don't know if I would say influenced per se, but it very much is, you know, it's part of who I am. And I've been very lucky in my life that I kind of had a good intuition, I guess you could say, about the things that interested me and the choices that I made in my career and in my interests and everything. I was always comfortable with it and just sort of did what I wanted. And I think it's all part of the same sort of vein in me that led me to, again, want to protect wildlife mm-hmm. and work hands-on with wild animals that draws me to characters like Wookiees and Ewoks and, you know, other fantasy creatures. I'm also a huge mega ElfQuest fan, and I'll give it a shameless plug. I actually host a podcast myself called The ElfQuest Show.
Awesome.
So all you guys out there that maybe have never heard of ElfQuest or are diehard fans, check that out, and maybe we'll do a crossover episode or
there
something.
You go. Like that. I'm sure there are some crossover fans, you know, similar genres and everything like that.
Yep.
So have you gotten much into the animated series like The Clone Wars or Rebels?
Yeah, so I actually loved The Clone Wars.
Yeah, me too.
And I didn't at first. I didn't see the film.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't see the film when it first came out. And I know it got really bad reviews.
Yeah.
And I think I probably started watching the series probably around season two. And I was like, okay, so it's really kind of kid-oriented. It's very like wham, bam, boom. And, you know, when you watch it on Cartoon Network, even the commercials
right.
sort of gave it this very sort of kiddie kind of feel. Mm-hmm. But the more I watched it and the more the series went on, I mean, they did some really dark stuff.
Yeah.
And some really – they went places that I was surprised that they would go in sort of an avowed children's show.
Right.
And I really like that. And I think they did a really great job at developing the characters. I mean, Ahsoka is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to see, well, I mean, I'll put it this way. Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars cartoon series pretty much blows away Anakin Skywalker in the movies. So no offense to good old Hayden, but I mean, the cartoon acts a lot better than he could in the movie. So
yeah.
Prequels. So yeah. And, you know, getting to explore those side stories mm-hmm. and see some of these characters that never would have made it into a film, get a little bit of on camera time. I love that. I love getting to see, you know, the day in the life kind of stories and then the action and the adventure. And again, the character development that you can do over the course of a multiple season series that you just can't do in a film. I love that. And I love the animation too.
Yeah.
So as far as Rebels go, you know, I'm still on the fence. I got to be honest with you. I don't, and I'll say this too. I'm very cognizant and aware that of how fans in particular are resistant to change. Mm-hmm. And the way that this all went down with Disney, I could see people kind of having a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction to be against the Rebels mm-hmm. in favor of the Clone Wars. And so I'm very aware of that. And I'm trying to be as neutral as I can because yeah. I did like the Clone Wars. And I was very sad at the way that it all played out with it ending. But I can say at this stage of the game, I mean, what are we on? 5 episodes, 6 episodes?
Yeah, something like that.
I don't think the animation is as good. There's something very flat about it. It almost looks like they need to do like another couple layers of the animation on top of it, especially when compared to the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not really loving any of the characters so far. I'm just, you know, they're not grabbing me. So we'll see. I mean, I'm obviously, I'm a diehard enough of a fan mm-hmm. that I'm not going to give up on it. I'm going to watch it through. And like the Clone Wars, it'll probably grow on me.
Yeah.
Into the characterizations a little bit. I'm really hoping to see some more of the vintage characters show up.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking too. Either the original trilogy or prequel trilogy characters, if they can just add them in, I think that would really improve the show.
I do too. And, you know, we've seen R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah.
And that was okay. but, you know, I think a little bit more of that would be great. And here's one of the reasons why. If you were, you know, sort of around for the original trilogy, we had this sort of long dry spell.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the prequels and that was great. And I'll say I'm not a hater of the prequels. I don't think they're as strong, mm-hmm. and there are some really irritating things about them, but I don't think they're as bad as it's cool to think that they're bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, the prequels, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you saw them and you were a 7-year-old kid, like you were when you saw the original trilogy,
right.
It wouldn't seem as bad, A, and B, let's be honest. You know, these are not Oscar-winning movies, you know, the original trilogy. You know, they're fun sci-fi action adventure romance movies, and you got to take them for what they're worth. I mean, again, they're not breaking cinema history for acting or script
right.
or anything. So I think you got to put those things in perspective with the prequels versus the original trilogy. But yeah, I mean, I think when the Clone Wars came out, I felt a little bit of a disappointment in that, you know, they have this whole world and this whole time frame to explore. Mm-hmm. And they're just obsessed with exploring the time frame of the prequels. And I remember thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to get a cartoon series between A New Hope and Empire, you know? And so when Rebels was announced, I was like, finally, you know, we're getting into the original trilogy territory.
Right.
And so far, it's been, we haven't seen much of dipping into there. And I think that's a huge missed opportunity. I'm sure they're going to do it more. And
yeah.
I'm sure they don't want to rely on it. They want these new characters to be established and for people to like them and get into it and everything. But I really do think they need to incorporate it a little bit more.
Yeah, I would really like to see Leia show up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Luke and Leia are around. They're kids,
right.
You know. I think they said in the most recent episode it's 15 years
after
Clone Wars. So, you know, they're roughly 15 years old.
Yeah.
And this is just a few years before the events of A New Hope, right? Because I think they were 17. Were they 17 when that...
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really, if they're around 14 or 15, mm-hmm. it's really right before that, so.
Yeah, there could be some interesting stories in there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what did you think of the title, The Force Awakens, for episode 7?
Okay, so I haven't really formed an opinion on that. And here's why. Because the last 2 weeks have been insane for me at work. And I've been traveling. I've been out in LA and up in New York and back and forth a couple times and just have a lot on my plate. Oh, wow. So I haven't honestly had a chance to dive into the nerdosphere and really read people's reactions.
Yeah.
I try not to, again, to have knee-jerk reactions about a lot of this stuff. I like to let it simmer a little bit, and I like to read and hear what other people's opinions are, both pro and con, before I make an ultimate decision. But I can say that, you know, at first blush, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it's definitely got a lot of potential and a lot of mystery and intrigue to it. So yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like I didn't realize that, you know, the Force was not awake, you know?
Right. Like, what That's what everyone keeps saying.
Is it really going to... you know, in sort of these dark years, has it been sort of slumbering?
Right. And
you know, because it's not been tapped into, because the Jedi are virtually extinct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there some you know, kind of awakening that's going to go on? And there's my dog barking. I'm going to apologize in advance.
Oh, no problem.
His name is Lucky, and he just wants to be a part of the podcast.
Aww. Hi, Lucky. What kind of dog is he?
He's a poodle mix. He's a little Aww. Fuzzy thing. He actually looks very similar to an Ewok.
Oh, nice.
If I put a hood on him, he could totally pass for an
Ewok. Oh, awesome. So, do you think we'll see Ewoks in episode 7?
Probably not. I don't think Ewoks have a lot of love out there for them in the universe. So,
yeah.
You know, I would love it. And even if it was just a little cameo, you know, you know, maybe somebody does a little side trip to Endor
That'd be
or whatever.
Cool.
I don't know how often Ewoks are really getting off Endor and traveling around. So,
right.
So I would be doubtful.
Yeah.
Because so many people hate the Ewoks, I would also
That's
imagine
true.
that would factor into their decisions on whether or not
right.
to feature them. So, yeah.
So that's a good segue to talking about your awesome Ewok diorama project.
Yep.
So, you know, one of the really great things about fandom is being able to create things and to share it with other fans. And so your Ewok project is a really good example of that. So do you want to just give us like an overview of what it's like for people
yeah.
who are listening who don't know what we're talking about?
Yeah. So if you haven't seen my blog post on Boing Boing, all about this.
Yeah.
Essentially, I have really got off the deep end into nerddom and and built this like crazy huge Ewok village diorama, Endor diorama.
Nice.
And it all started a little bit over a year ago. I was home at my mom and dad's, and for some reason, I ended up in the attic. I had to do something or get something, and I had a few boxes of old toys up there, and. I was like, oh, you know, this will be fun. Let me kind of have a little nostalgic trip through the past and started going through them. And I had, you know, a lot of G.I. Joe toys. I'm a child of the 80s. So G.I. Joe, and I had Transformers and, you know, Masters of the Universe and all that good stuff. But of course, I had a ton of Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Both things that I had myself as toys and also toys that I inherited from my older sister who had a bunch of Star Wars stuff mm-hmm. and also my older cousin. That I kind of inherited as they got a little bit older. And so I started going through everything and, you know, again, fun nostalgia trip. But I saw some of the Ewok action figures, you know, the old school
yeah.
Kenner action figures from the first wave of Return of the Jedi toys. And I was just like, oh, God, like I just remembered how much I loved the Ewoks and the whole idea of this sort of, you know, little furry, cute looking, but also, let's be honest, completely deadly badass creatures that will eat you, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, they're not shy about like,
so
you know,
true.
Throwing you on fire and having you for lunch, you know? And also the other thing that kind of attracts me to them is this whole idea of, you know, creatures that are close to nature
mm-hmm.
rising up against this sort of emotionless, moral-less technological society
mm-hmm.
and kind of saying, hey, by the way, you can't discount Mother Nature because at the end of the day, she'll kick your ass. And that to me is what the Ewoks represent. And I think that's what George Lucas really wanted them to represent.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. He wanted to make toys. I'll give him that. And you know what? It worked because I bought them. Not only did I buy them then, but as I finished telling the story, I bought them now. And I spent a lot of money on them too. But anyway, I saw some of these, action figures, Chief Chirpa, and Wicket and Logre and Tebow. And I found that the remnants of my Ewok village, which was sort of broken up into pieces. And I was like, you know, I think, wouldn't it be kind of fun? And like I said on the blog, I think I used the term like geeky cool or something like that to, you know, just bring these home and I'll put them on my work desk or whatever. So I did that and it was fun and it was cool. And then for some reason, I ended up going on eBay, and I've never really shopped on eBay before. And I typed in Ewok and then it was all over.
Uh-oh.
Because I saw all of the different that had been released between 1984 and now.
Wow.
And I literally was like, oh my God. And I'm fortunate enough to be in a position financially, you know, in my life that I can, you know, I can spend a few $100 on some toys on eBay. And so I ended up maybe going a little bit overboard and I bought like every Ewok possible that I could track down. And then of course I started Googling and, you know, found sites like rebelscum.com where they list all the action figures, and I ferreted out literally every single action figure that has ever been made.
Oh, wow. So how many of them are there?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the exact count, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of between 30 and 40.
Oh, wow.
And I have multiples of many of them.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, when you're on eBay, you never know if you're going to win. So sometimes, you know, I would bid and I would end up winning multiples. And that's fine. Because what happens is then you can kind of switch up hoods and weapons, and then you get multiples.
You can make your own Ewoks.
Exactly. And most recently, I bought a bag of miscellaneous Ewoks for like $7.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
15 of them. And mostly it was the old figures, and they were not in very good condition. They're kind of beat up and their paint is off. But what I'm going to do is actually figure out a way. I have to do a little bit of research on painting the plastic action figures, but I'm going to like make my own Ewoks. I'm going to different colors and all that. So what happened is I ended up buying all these Ewoks. I ended up buying pieces of the old Ewok villages, and got them all together and essentially built this huge diorama.
That's so cool.
And so this was about a year ago. The other thing that I think is important to the story is that, as I mentioned, I work with wildlife. I work for the National Wildlife Federation. So that's another shameless plug. If you guys care about animals and wildlife, check us out, nwf.org, and get involved. But I grew up one of those kids that spent all my time running around in the woods and catching frogs and snakes and bringing them home and making, you know, huge displays and terrariums with living plants and running water and all of that. I mean, I very easily could work in the zoo world and do things like exhibit design so that the animals have, you know, natural settings and, you know, sort of beautiful environments to live in. And so I did a lot of that as a kid. And in adult life, I don't really have time for that because, again, I'm busy. I travel a lot and whatever. And so, so creating this sort of diorama of Endor not only was scratching my nerd itch, if you will, and getting to play with sort of the whole Star Wars world a little bit, but it also was very much in the vein of my old hobby, which was creating these kind of exhibits, because it was like creating a living, breathing kind of planet in greenery. And so I used, you know, I went out and I collected pieces of wood with cool bark and fungus growing on it from the woods. And I found these really cool pine cones. And I spent a lot of money at Michael's, the craft store, on, you know, dried moss and all that kind of stuff. And so at the end of the day, I built this big diorama. I forgot too. The one key piece of it is the backdrop of it was a forest mural that I bought at IKEA. And if anybody has been to IKEA in the last year, you probably know what I'm talking about. It's this huge mass that fills up a wall. It's like 7 feet by you know, 5 feet tall. And I set it on the back of a long dresser, and that's what against the wall. And then I built this diorama in front of it. And again, if you guys go to the Boing Boing post, literally just Google Boing Boing Ewoks and come up. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so, it's really cool. You got to check it out.
Yeah, so that's kind of how it all came to be, and how I got, you know, sucked in back into the world of Star Wars toys as a grown up. I freely admit it. I own my geekery and all that. So and I really enjoyed it. It was fun. That's, you know, and I'll say this too. A lot of my friends gave me a lot of grief, like, oh my God, you're like playing with Star Wars toys and You know, it's like, I don't think of it as playing with them necessarily. I think of it as creating art. I think
absolutely
of this as a piece of art. And yeah, is it geeky and is it Star Wars? Absolutely. But I enjoy doing it. And for me, that's what's important. I don't really give a rat's ass what everybody else says. So, you know, so that's how it all came to pass.
Yeah, that's really cool. So how much time approximately did this whole project take you?
Oh, that's another good question that I don't have a precise answer to. But many hours. I mean,
yeah.
Like I said, I think it was probably last August or September, like of 2012, that I went up in the attic of my parents and pulled out the toys and everything. And then I would say over the course of, well, let's see, by the time like Christmas rolled around, I pretty much had it put together the way that I wanted it.
Cool.
So it took over the course of 3 months and again, lots of trips to Michael's, lots of shopping on eBay. To kind of get it all pulled together.
Very
and
cool.
The other thing that I did too, speaking of Michael's, is that I did buy a bunch of craft paints and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the paint job on the original Ewok Village was pretty bad. It was just sort of solid brown and solid tan for the you know, sort of platform parts. And the third piece of my sort of interest that was piqued by doing this is that I'm also an artist. And so as self-taught artist until high school, and then I started getting some formal training. And it's one of the things that, you know, you get older and you start your career and a lot of things that you did as a kid, you don't do anymore. Like, right. Again, for me, having a lot of, you know, exotic pets and designing exhibits for them or doing my artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of rediscovered that through this project because I did get a bunch of paints and I actually did a paint job, a completely new paint job on all of the old Ewok Village pieces that I had gotten.
Cool.
I had my original one and then I bought a bunch more just to make the textures look more like real wood.
Yeah.
I really wanted it to look realistic.
That's cool.
I even incorporated some living plants into the whole thing that, you know, I had to water and make sure they got enough light and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was really kind of a three-part thing. It was my fun kind of nerdy geek thing with Star Wars. It was my love of designing natural habitats, if you will, even in sort of a mini micro scale. And then it was kind of my artistic side that I hadn't really given an outlet for. And so that's what kind of it all came to pass. But yeah, it did take me several months to get it all pulled together. And I will say that I have moved since. So I did have to pull the entire thing apart.
Oh, man.
However, part two will be coming shortly.
Oh, that was my next question. Do you have any other projects in store?
Yeah. So I've moved from a fairly small apartment, bought a house, and I actually have a whole kind of big sunroom at the back of the house.
Ooh.
That I've been slowly collecting new things to build up into the sort of the Ewok Village Endor part two.
Awesome.
It's going to be about twice the size of what you saw in the Boing Boing blog.
Oh, wow.
And because it is in a sunroom, I'm going to have a lot more opportunity to incorporate living plants. So it will kind of change and grow. I actually really want to incorporate a water feature.
Ooh.
It might even be moving. I don't know if I'll be able to pull that off or not.
Cool.
But yeah, that's sort of my plan for the winter. You know, winter's just around the corner and I'll have a little bit more free time and, you know, won't be doing stuff outside and gardening, and whatever. So I'll be cooped up indoors like everybody else and I'll be able to focus a little bit more on it. So
awesome.
I would imagine that Boing Boing will run kind of you know, my Ewok Village part two.
Yeah.
I would say maybe sometime. I'm not going to pin myself to a deadline, but by the end of the winter, I would be surprised if I didn't have something built and ready to show.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll definitely have to keep our eyes open for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love sharing it. And you know, my friend Rob Biskitza is one of the managing editors over at Boing Boing.
Oh.
And so I've written a few things for them. And so on a whim, a couple weeks ago, I was like, I feel like I need to share this with the world. And so I was on Twitter. And no surprise here, I use TweetDeck and I have I track a column for hashtag Ewok.
Nice.
And I saw somebody post that November 1st was World Ewok Appreciation.
Right.
It's like, oh no, there is not such a thing. And so I poked around, and I really don't know if there was such a thing other than this one blog post that this guy tweeted.
Right.
It was actually from last year, but I was like, I don't really care because I'm going to run with it. And so I did a bunch of tweeting.
Yeah, I think that's how I actually met you on Twitter.
That's, right. That's exactly it. Yeah. And so it was literally, it was Halloween. So it was the day before. Right. And I was like, I gotta, like, if I'm going to do it, I need to do it on World Ewok Appreciation Day.
Yeah, totally.
And so I emailed Rob and said, hey, would Boing Boing be interested in this? And he was like, yeah, go for it. Sweet. And so I put it all together and got it in late on, you know, late night the night before. And mm-hmm. Rob was able to post it live. And it got really great. It got great pickup. It got picked up by a bunch of other blogs.
Sweet.
Needorama. Was it IO9? I think IO9 might have run something on it as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so people, even though it's not cool to like Ewoks, you know, like just like it's not cool to like the prequels or whatever.
Or Jar Jar.
Or Jar Jar. You know what? I might have to agree with everybody on Jar Jar. I don't hate him as much as most. But
yeah, me too.
But yeah, Ewoks, I think, got a little bit of love, and it's well-deserved.
Yeah, I love Ewoks. They're so cute.
Yeah. And they will eat you.
Yes. Unless you give them food, then they're your best friend.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's about all the questions I have for this time. But thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. And I found a new podcast to subscribe to. I didn't know about you guys until this. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to check you guys out. And like I was saying before, if there are anybody that's out there that's interested in ElfQuest, check out my podcast, The ElfQuest Show.
Yeah,
and even if you're not interested in ElfQuest, check it out because it's really awesome. And if you like Star Wars, it's got a lot of the same flavor and feel, even though it's very different. Mm-hmm. And it started at the same time. It started in the late 70s.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, so definitely.
So where can people connect to you, like on Twitter or Facebook or whatever?
You know what? The easiest thing is for people to go to my website, which is naturegeek.org.
Okay.
Naturegeek.org. And that's my professional website. But I also have my links to all of my social media pages on there. So
okay,
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Tumblr.
Cool.
And so that's a really great place to go. And also, obviously, if you want to get involved in the conservation work of the National Wildlife Federation, you can do all of that right there. So if you want to help save the animals and save the real life Endor, awesome. You can do it on my website.
That's so cool.
Yep.
All right. So do you want to leave us with a yub nub?
Yub nub.
Okay, so a big thanks to David for coming on the show. I had a great time with the interview, and we hope you come back real soon. How about you listeners out there? Is there anybody who would like to talk Star Wars and or Doctor Who with us? We would love that. If that sounds like something you might like to do, just let us know on Twitter or Facebook, or if email's your thing, you can contact us at hello@whowars.net.
Hey everyone, it's Rob here. Look, just before we go into this segment, I've got to say it's probably one of the best Star Wars Rebels pieces Leo and I have recorded, but speaking of recording, something went horribly wrong with this and her vocal came out so low, I've had to do some surgery and basically go through and amplify each individual moment where she speaks. So the quality of this recording is not the best, but I don't want to redo it because I think what we captured here was a really great conversation. I think it stands up, but I do want to say apologies, guys, for the audio quality here. I know we sometimes have a little trouble with Skype from time to time, particularly when I connect to Leo and we're in the same house, which is weird, but here it was just really crazy, but it's listenable, and I'm putting it out knowing that it's got flaws and just asking your forgiveness for that, if I may. Cheers for that, and here is the feature. All right, moving into the Star Wars Rebels section of this episode. As always, I'm joined by Leo. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm getting by. You just woke up, I believe.
Yeah, first cup of coffee.
Now, I've been in the hot little studio here all morning doing other things, so what's it like down the hallway?
Not much cooler.
Yeah, it is. Summer here in Australia, for those who haven't already cottoned onto that from our recent podcasts.
Yes, it definitely is.
All right, now moving on into this episode, well, these two episodes, actually, we finally got a two-part episode, something I've been longing for pretty much since the show started.
Yeah.
And these two episodes were called Empire Day and Gathering Forces. Now, I guess the first thing to say is these were very Ezra-based stories. Did that make you happy, Leo?
Well, it didn't make me angry, so it was all right.
Well, that's good. I mean, we got some background to his parents. I mean, not a full background. In fact, I think one very big thing about his parents has been left hanging throughout these episodes. But we got a little more info, and we learned he's 15, which is something you've wanted to know, I think, in every episode we've recorded so far.
Do we know how old Sabine is yet? That's the question.
No, no. And I'm sure if we went digging, we could find that out. I guess, are you asking that because she seems a bit more interested in him lately?
Yeah, I guess it's not really that weird, but I don't know. It might get a little weird depending if she's like 18 or 19.
Yeah, I just felt a very definite sort of turn in their relationship in these episodes. It just felt different. That said, these two episodes felt different to everything that's come before, actually.
Yeah, everything in these two episodes felt very different, felt more refined.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say as much. It felt maybe more adult, almost.
I wouldn't quite go that far, but it seems like the Empire is no longer holding the idiot ball, that they were on top of things pretty, as the situation changed, they were changing with it, which doesn't seem to fit their MO very often. And the rebels, who are now being referred constantly to as the rebels, were, you know, they almost seem like the bad guys.
Yeah? How do you mean?
I don't know. I just find myself kind of cheering for the Empire, even though I felt kind of sorry for Ezra and the way he treated the Rodian and all that. I kind of just found myself cheering for the Empire again, because they had their act together, and they hadn't done anything wrong in this particular episode. They were just retaliating against these, you know, people that were trying to blow up their new ship. They hadn't actually done anything wrong in this episode.
No, they were just having a little parade, and they brought out their new ship, and yeah, I guess it did make me feel almost a bit uncomfortable too, where the team was like, okay, let's go and blow that up. And it's like, oh, why?
because we need to declare that we actually are rebels. I don't know, it just seemed like it was just done for messing with the Empire just for the fun of it.
Yeah, that's interesting that it both made us feel that way, because obviously we haven't discussed this since we watched it last night. But I kind of felt that way too. And I guess maybe that's good writing, that it's not just black and white, good and evil. You sort of do have different feelings about what's going on.
Well, I'm glad that it got to that point. As you said, it's good writing. And I've always been a Rebel supporter in my Star Wars years. But, you know, the Empire, not everything the Empire has done is xenophobic, crazy, totalitarian, let me oppress you crap, you know? Like they've done some good things. Like they've united the galaxy together when nobody else really could, not even the Old Republic, as we would have seen in the prequels. You know, that was falling apart.
Is this your love of the Roman Empire shining through?
Yeah. Maybe a little, but, you know, as I've gotten older, I've started to see that I try to understand why the bad guys are bad, instead of just saying, oh, they're bad, let's just go against them.
Mm.
We have to. And I've never enjoyed things being as simple as black and white.
Yeah, no, me either.
They really aren't. That's just not the case.
Yeah, exactly. Something else we learned about Ezra, I've made a little note here, we got to see his house in the city. Now, up until now, he's been living in this colossal penthouse in some tower just outside of the town they seem to hang out in all the time, and we'll get to that in a moment. I do wonder who owns this tower, or how he lives there, or why no one else wants to live there, or why no one else breaks in, because it seems he and his family had a house in the city, which is all boarded up now, and which he gained access to in this episode.
It's interesting that house hasn't been repurposed.
Yeah, because, I mean, when did his parents get arrested? Is it some... he was 7 or something, I think he said.
Yeah, he was 8 years ago, and he's 15 now.
Yeah, and so it's just sat there in the middle of a fairly small, underdeveloped area. You'd think someone would want to repurpose it, as you say.
I'm kind of recalling one of the Empire guys saying it was Low City or something, like it was maybe it wasn't a really good part of town or something.
Yeah, but gosh, you'd think someone would. Well, I guess the Rodian was. He was hanging out there. That's where they found him.
Well, he seemed to be the more intelligent character. Despite being kind of crazy, but that was, you know, madness is the other side of genius.
Yeah, well, he had that sort of Lobot headband on. It reminded me very much of Lobot, actually, from Empire.
I'm sure that was the inspiration for that, yes.
Yeah, and when he would talk, he was a bit, how do you put it? He was a bit Rain Man. He was kind of like a genius because of all these facts that were in his head.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was doing what he could to cope with all that.
Yeah, no, that was very interesting, and I think that's not the last we've seen of him, perhaps.
Probably not.
Now, the Inquisitor popped up in this episode, and I want to say up front, he seemed more menacing and had a better entrance than his first entrance in the series.
Yeah. I don't know why that is. I don't know why his initial entrance was just, here I am, surprise! And now it's like, now he's got an agenda and he really wants to catch his quarry.
Oh yeah, the troops lined up and he marched in and there was music and it was like, oh, the Inquisitor's here. You know, but in the first episode he popped up and yeah, you're quite right. Oh, hello, I'm the Inquisitor.
It's just funny thinking of the Inquisitor as the bad guy because I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition for the past week. So when I hear Inquisitor, I think, oh, right, he's bad guy, got it.
Are the Inquisitors good in that game?
Yeah, the character you play as is the...
Oh, okay. Very interesting. Yeah, because normally Inquisitors and Inquisitions are bad things.
Oh, no one ever expects them.
Oh, I knew you were going to go there. Now, speaking of the Inquisitor, he had a line at the very end of the episode, "My master will not be pleased," and you were scared that he might end up being Vader's apprentice.
Yep. Well, in the EU, they're always trying... I know the EU doesn't count now, but they were always trying to... Oh, this mysterious person was trained by Vader. That seemed to be like a trope of the EU. I think the Force Unleashed series all follows a character like that.
Yeah, it seems whenever Vader was off-screen, he was off-training one of, you know, several dozen people.
Yeah, I always found it very cheesy. Just like I think modifying the appearance of a lightsaber is very cheesy. It's just, it's unnecessary. Sometimes things should just be simple.
Now, by that, just so people don't misunderstand, in Rebels, the look of the lightsabers is different to most of the movies because they're based on the A New Hope lightsabers. But what you mean by modifying a lightsaber relates to Episode 7, yes?
Well, yeah, and also the Inquisitor's weird thing that he has.
Oh, yeah, that circular thing he has on his back.
Yeah, I find that interesting that he carries that on his back. I guess you have to because it's so big.
Yeah, the shape is interesting. It can be single-bladed, double-bladed. It spins around. It slices, it dices. You know, buy one now and get some free steak knives.
Well, I love steak knives.
Well, you love steak.
That's true.
But we digress. Now, getting back to this, my master will not be pleased. I went and sought out the bit of video from Darth Vader in the first episode of Rebels. That was video you and I didn't see because we saw the original episode, then several weeks later they redid it with a Darth Vader scene. Now, in that, Darth Vader talks to the Inquisitor, but he calls him Inquisitor, and the Inquisitor calls him Lord Vader, so there's not sort of any apprentice or master conversation there, so he might not be referring to Vader. Hopefully not, anyway.
There's another alternative. What if his master is Palpatine?
Well, yeah, possibly.
Who is also known for taking on multiple apprentices and breaking the rule of two whenever it suits him.
Was it Mara Jade was one of his?
I'm not sure she was technically an apprentice, but she was just basically trained like one.
Yeah, I seem to recall she got called the Emperor's Hand or something.
Oh, she was definitely the Emperor's Hand, yes.
Yeah. All right. Now, moving into the episode, and towards the end where Kanan is fighting with the Inquisitor, there was this really interesting concept where they got the Inquisitor to come down to the planet we had last seen with, gosh, I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was...
I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was the Sabine and Hera.
It was something like Out of Darkness or something, and they had these weird creatures there who were very vicious and violent. And Kanan and Ezra set these creatures on the Inquisitor and the Stormtroopers, and that's all great. You know, interesting use of those characters, interesting use of the location again, blah, blah, blah. But towards the end, Ezra summoned up a really big version of one of these creatures and set it on the Inquisitor, and he got in trouble for it and was like, oh no, that's the dark side. I couldn't quite figure out how sending, you know, dozens of these little creatures on the Stormtroopers was good, but sending the big one on them was bad.
I think it was because Kanan could maybe sense that the purpose behind this... Ezra hasn't been really right for the entire episode. His motivations, his unwillingness to forgive and all that, it's very skirting dark side-ness. So maybe his motivation for summoning this thing, because he doesn't just want to defend himself, he wants to actually kill the Inquisitor. Maybe that's what kind of sends off alarm bells in Kanan. Or maybe it reminds Kanan of something from his past, which we've heard Jack all about, and it just kind of freaked him out, because he seemed pretty spooked after that. So, I mean, I can see what you're saying. Like, it seems like a bit hypocritical to be like, oh, you can send little monsters but not big monsters. I think it was all in his purpose and how he was going about it and what his thoughts were. The way he put so much of himself into the monster. I mean, because the line later was, if you open yourself up too much, you can make yourself vulnerable. And that's what... Maybe it wasn't so much that Ezra had started a dark side step on the path to the dark side, but he had opened himself to the possibility that it could happen. And Kanan had never really thought that much ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a good reading of it. And I think, you know, with Ezra being a bit angry and a bit of a little snot in this episode and maybe treading towards the dark side, even though it wasn't a conscious decision to do so, he was just going there, you know, naturally, we could be in for some interesting episodes. Although, I've got to say, it is a change from the sort of happier, you know, I don't know quite how to describe him, Ezra of the earlier episodes. It seems to be a sudden change.
It doesn't seem as sudden as Anakin's change. I mean, it's not quite that. Like, here's this little kid, then suddenly now he's really angry. Okay, when did that happen?
Oh, I thought you might have even been referring to his change where he goes to arrest the Emperor, and within about 2 minutes he's killed Mace Windu and turned to the dark side.
Yeah, that too. That whole, you know, like, the prequels are all about his downfall. Well, the downfall only happened in, like, 2 minutes. So, what was the rest of the prequels about? Anyway.
But we shouldn't go down that rabbit hole now.
No. No, I think Ezra is just... Well, part of it, he's 15. He's going to be an angsty freaking teenager. Who isn't? Like, you know, that is, like, a really bad time for anyone to be exposed to the Force and learning how to use it, because there's just so much else going on in his head, and he's just not centered. He's not going to be ready to think like a Jedi yet.
Hmm. Ah, fair enough. And I've got to say, it was good to see Kanan and Ezra get beaten. They're not like superhero Jedi. I mean, they got away, but they were beaten.
By the skin of their teeth, yeah. But I really like that. And I also like, again, the conversation in The Phantom after that, where Kanan just realizes he's way in it, over his head. And he doesn't pull off this arrogant, like, I'm the teacher and you should have listened to me. And he doesn't try to lecture. I mean, he really seems to understand where Ezra's at. And that, for the first time, seems like there's a bigger connection between them than just they can both use the Force.
Yeah, and this comes back to this step up in the writing to me. I mean, I should have gone to look to see who wrote this, whether it's a new writer or whether it's someone who's written before, and for some reason they're just writing so much better. Part of it, though, I think, is that we finally got a two-parter, the first two-parter since the opening story.
Yeah, and not only that, but we've revisited old locations, as we've said, but we've also brought in every character that we've seen so far was in this episode. Like, we saw Agent Callis and that crazy minister woman with the weird, annoying voice, and the Inquisitor, and that other officer. Like, they were all there. They all showed up and played their parts, and it felt maybe a bit more finale-ish.
And of course, raising up all the same locations, I've got to mention, we're still on Lothal, and these guys are known by sight to all these Imperials, yet they walk around the streets and sort of hang out, and no one notices them? What's with that?
I don't know. I don't know why Lothal is so freaking important. It's an outer rim planet. It's like Tatooine, except it's got planes instead of sand. Like, what is with this planet? Can we go somewhere more interesting now, please?
Yeah, like, for me, I mean, I hate to nitpick on things like this, especially with a kids show, but for me, if Lothal was, like, their base, where no one knew they were, I could live with that. You know, they fly back to Lothal, and that's where they have their base. Wonderful. But they sort of park the ship just outside of town, where they're really well known as rebels and really wanted by the Empire, and then they just walk around town, they hang out in bars, and they get away with it. It just seems just a bit forced.
Yeah, I don't get it. Maybe now that they are being referred to as rebels more and more, it's maybe they're going to realize they just can't stay there. And they've got to go maybe hook up with other rebels. Or maybe we'll find Ezra's parents. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I know they're going for a New Hope vibe there. Like, when they were sitting in the bar, even the way the table was illuminated, and I think the way Hera was leaning on it, it was very evocative of Han Solo in the cantina in A New Hope.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I know that they want to redo classic scenes and stuff, but come on, if I was boring, let's go.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, in A New Hope, sure, Han Solo is a smuggler. He might be wanted by some people, but it's conceivable that some stormtroopers might walk past him and not really pay him any attention. But these guys keep getting up to capers all the time on Lothal, are seen all the time. I think they'd be more recognizable than a Han Solo.
The argument to that would be that they're not looking for them. They're at that time, they're looking for the Rodian so much. I mean, the story was more about them chasing him than the rest of the crew just got kind of wrapped up into it because of Ezra. So
yeah, and you've just reminded me of that search. Rather than generic stormtroopers wandering around, like, three TIE fighters flew in and the pilots were wandering around looking for the Rodian.
Yeah, that seemed a bit strange to me. Why would it only be three TIE pilots, and why would they care? Like, they wouldn't be doing ground mission stuff.
No, it was a bit weird, especially when there's a garrison, or at least a lot of stormtroopers already in that town.
Yeah, I think they only put them there because they look cool in their full black gear and stuff.
Yeah, and we did get to see TIE fighters landing, which is, you know, a rarity in Star Wars.
I don't like the way TIE fighters land. It just seems like if you push it just a little, it'll fall right over. Keep TIE fighters in space. I don't need them to be in the atmosphere to be cool.
Alright. Overall, what did you think of these two episodes? And I guess we'll look at them as two episodes as a single story.
Well, because it is a single story. It's definitely the best we've seen so far, and I can't really remember what ratings I've been giving, so I'm going to say maybe an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm up there. Easy 8. I might even lean towards 8.5 or 9. These were the best two episodes I think I've seen since the debut episode.
Depending on where things go from here, it might set us up very well, in which case I'd probably go towards a 9. But knowing what we know so far, there's still room for improvement, definitely.
You mean, like, if in the next... I think the show comes back in January, early January. You're saying if in those episodes it goes back to sort of comedy, caper of the week things, you might be a bit disappointed after where we've been with these two?
Right.
Okay, yeah, look, I'd feel the same. I'd like to see this really power on now and take us somewhere. All right, well, thank you for joining us, and will you be back in the new year to talk more Star Wars Rebels?
Well, I'm not going anywhere.
Fair enough. Hey there, everyone, and welcome to what will be my final Doctor Who comic review on the podcast. If you were listening to the intro to this episode from the next 12th Doctor comic, we'll be having The Rev take over. And something I probably didn't mention in the intro, if I recall, is that going forward, the 11th Doctor comic's going to be taken over by Lex, and the 10th Doctor comic's going to be taken over by Kate. So that's really exciting news for the Doctor Who comic on the podcast, to have three different members of the team talking about it, and none of them are me. So my quest to get more voices onto the podcast and have you not hear my voice all the time is succeeding, I think. That's very exciting. So I'll still sit in the background, of course, to pick up any comics that people can't do if they're sick or on vacation or whatever it might be, because I do really like the Doctor Who comics, I must say. But I am really excited that they're all going to be taken over by different members of the team in the future, and this is the last one I'll be doing for the foreseeable future. Now, I mentioned, this is Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor. This is issue number 2, and it's part 2 of the story Terraformer, written by Robbie Morrison and drawn by Dave Taylor. I actually own some of Dave Taylor's art. It's not Doctor Who art, it's actually Judge Dredd art. So that's kind of cool, but I digress. In the last episode, we had the Doctor and Clara arriving on a planet that they're expecting to be an icy sort of planet. Clara was in a ski suit and had skis out, but it had been terraformed into a very tropical planet, and one thing led to another. The Doctor and Clara ended up going down into the inside the planet and came across a Hyperion. Now, this issue of the comic is really a tale of two halves, if I can use a sporting analogy. I love the first half, I'm not as fussed on the second half. And the first half is a really great explanation of these beings, the Hyperions. They're described as a race of sentient suns, a unique physiological fusion of DNA, nuclear energy, and hyperintelligence. And we're shown them getting around the universe, being very benevolent and helping races rise up. They're just these, you can imagine if you're a sun and you're a god and you're intelligent, you're colossally powerful, and they're helping the universe. But then as they start to enter what's described as the final stage of their evolution, they begin to burn up, as suns do. Their benevolence becomes malevolence, and they start attacking all these worlds that they had helped set up, essentially. This is a really wonderful sci-fi backstory. I'm loving this, you know, as I'm reading through these pages. And then we come to all the smarter races getting together to fight these Hyperions. And who are they led by? Rassilon himself. So, you know, this comic's going large. In the second issue, we've got big-time Time Lord backstory, Rassilon fighting sun gods. Amazing stuff, right? This is what I mean by being a tale of two halves. I love all this backstory. But when it comes down to it, the Doctor and Clara fighting this Hyperion, this what's left of one of these sun gods down underneath this planet, is really just a ranty kind of, you know, lava sort of creature, you know, arguing with the Doctor and quite happy to zap one of the Doctor's team. He's down there with a number of people. He zaps one of them and burns him up within seconds, but doesn't seem to do that to anyone else, even though the Doctor and Clara and so on are, you know, back-chatting him and arguing with him and so on. Why doesn't he just wipe them out? I don't know. And then they run away from the creature. They let this gas sort of slow him down and run away from him for a bit. But then they go back to confront him. This is after Clara shows off some fencing skills that we didn't know she had. And as I say, then they go back to confront him via a strange sort of wedding ceremony that's going on the planet. We were talking in the last review about one of these rich men who's terraformed the planet. He's getting married, but that doesn't go to plan. The Doctor's there at the wedding. It's kind of funny. But then it's back to essentially arguing with this Hyperion and then drowning him out with water, with ice, and freezing him, and the Doctor escapes just in time. I'm really ripping through the plot quickly so I can talk more about it once I get through it. And that's that, until we see on the very last page, and this is where the comic probably redeems itself in the second half, we see the planet Neptune in the year 2114, and it seems that another Hyperion might be trapped on Neptune. So Looking at this issue, I can really divide it into sort of two halves. There's the excellent first half where we learn all about the Hyperions and all this great backstory. Then the second half is really just the Doctor confronting it twice, and the first time slowing it down with a cold sort of gas, and the second time doing it more comprehensively with water and ice. And in between that, just having an argument. And, you know, that leads to some very Doctorish lines, which is cool, you know, because you can imagine the Doctor arguing with a god, essentially. And that's neat, but it's fairly simplistic. And so what I was really excited about in the first half didn't really pay off in the second half, if I'm to be brutally honest about it. But we then get to that last page with another Hyperion rising on Neptune, and I think, okay, well, this is going somewhere. We've had these first two issues essentially to introduce the character of the Doctor and Clara as they appear in this comic series. Cool. We've learned about the Hyperions. He's defeated one fairly easily and pretty simply, actually. But now there's another one out there on Neptune. I'm sure the Doctor's going to run into it. And assuming he doesn't defeat it in the same way with some freezing gas or some water or something, hopefully he's got a more interesting way to defeat it. Hopefully it does more than just sort of stomp around underneath a planet and get angry and shouty. And maybe we'll have a really good story leading from here. So all is not lost. I think this might be leading up to, hopefully, something really cool. And it'll be up to the Rev to review issue 3, 4 and beyond to tell you what actually happens. But for me, it's a strange sort of issue. As I say, I like the first half and I like where it goes on the last page. In between, though, it's a bit simplistic, but I think it's part of a bigger story. So there's my rambly stream of conscious thoughts on the 12th Doctor number 2 from Titan Comics. It's certainly not a known goal by any means to continue those sporting analogies, and I do think it's going somewhere. I guess like when you're watching a series of Doctor Who on television, you can't always see where the arc is going at first. So I'll be sticking with it. I'll still be reading, even though I'm not doing the reviews going forward. And I think you should be too. If you've read it, what do you think? You've probably had time to read it by now. I should have done this 2 weeks ago. But if you have any thoughts on it, as always, tweet them, email them, write us an MP3, whatever you like, and we'll get it on the show in some way, shape, or form. All right then, let's move on. Well, here we are at the end of the 18th Who Wars. It's quite amazing that we've made it to 18, and before the year is out, I think we'll be at 20. Because, as I mentioned in the intro to this episode, we will have 2 episodes in December, not our usual weekly sort of schedule, and they'll fall on the 14th and 28th of December. So episode 19 on the 14th and episode 20 on the 28th. We may have more if any sort of surprise issues crop up, if any sort of perhaps interviews come our way and we bang out another episode in between times, but I would expect to at least have episodes 19 and 20 out before the end of the year. So, look, thank you so much for listening, as always, and my thanks to the team of Leo and Kate and Lex and, of course, the Rev, our newest member. Just awesome to have a growing team. Just awesome to have sat here and spoken so much about Star Wars this time. I know it's been a long time coming. I've been promising it for a while. And with the last 2 episodes, and particularly some of the Star Wars fans, I think were starting to lose faith, thinking that I might have been an all Doctor Who guy. It's not the case. I love Doctor Who and I love Star Wars. So pleased to have a Star Wars episode out. So pleased to have seen that trailer. So pleased to have Kate doing interviews now. So pleased to have the Rev on board. So pleased to have Lex surreptitiously record her cousin for her segment this episode. So pleased to have my wife, who normally doesn't like public speaking or doing things like podcasts, get on and do Star Wars Rebels with me every week. So pleased to be here. So pleased to be running Who Wars and producing it. If you can't tell, my passion for this show is just going up and up each week, and it's just so exciting to be here. But we wouldn't be here without you guys listening, and that's just so important to us. So, as always, if you have any feedback, get it into us, email, Twitter, Facebook, write us an MP3, whatever you like. And of course, if you have iTunes, jump on there, leave us a rating and review, let other fans find us, And it'll just make us so happy to know we're reaching even more fans out there, because this show really is grassroots, by fans, for the fans. I know I'm ranting. I'll get off my soapbox now, and I'll see you all on December 14th with episode 19. Take it easy, everyone.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.